Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I am your host, Mark Levine, and I got a hangover. Got a post-election hangover. If you're listening to my voice, you probably feel the same way I do. You have a headache. You want to vomit. You have trouble sleeping at night. You are paranoid. You recognize that sometimes paranoia is the right choice. Look, we're all going to try to recover. But what happened last Tuesday, unfortunately, as we know, is not one night of binging on the town. This is, I don't know, DEFCON 2. This is on the brink of the apocalypse. And it helps us to remember at times like these that it has been worse in America. We have undergone a brutal and bloody civil war. We've undergone a terrible Great Depression. At the same time, we shouldn't in any way treat this issue lightly. We shouldn't pretend that this is no big deal. This was just a presidential election. Our candidate lost. That's, of course, not the case at all. The last candidate to openly run on a white nationalist platform was George Wallace, who ran for president in 1968. He actually won some states, but was a third-party candidate. That race was won by Richard Nixon, who decided, in fact, because of George Wallace's success, remember, prior to the 60s, the Democrats were largely the party of the racists, the party of Jim Crow, the party of the South. The Republicans used to be the party of Abraham Lincoln. They used to be the party of abolitionism, freeing the slaves, the party of black people. Richard Nixon recognized in that race, where he barely beat Hubert Humphrey. Let's all recall that Hillary Clinton's margin of victory over Donald Trump, it was larger than Nixon's over Humphrey's, or Kennedy's over Nixon's, or Carter's over Ford's, or Al Gore's over George Bush, or, and they're still counting, 7 million votes in California, probably going to be larger than even Bush's margin over Kerry. She's probably going to win by about 2%. Which, if it were not for the Electoral College, that archaic, undemocratic vestige left over in our Constitution, she, of course, would be on her way to becoming president, and I wouldn't be close to vomiting. But Richard Nixon learned in 1968 of the power of white racism in America and decided on what was then called the Southern Strategy. He would openly appeal to the bigots. He would do it using dog whistles. He would say things like busing and states' rights, but everybody knew what he meant. The goal was to convince the white racists, the very strong, powerful amount of hatred among some white people in America, and turn them against blacks, immigrants, foreigners, people of different religions. And it was successful. Richard Nixon largely took the George Wallace coalition into the Republican Party and, well, won a landslide victory in 1972, with only Massachusetts and D.C. standing up for George McGovern. When Nixon was, he was impeached in the Judiciary Committee. He would have been removed from office for his crimes. Interestingly enough, what were his crimes? His crimes were either ordering or covering up a break-in into his opponent's private headquarters, the Democrat National Committee's headquarters at the Watergate Hotel. That's where Watergate comes from. That was the crime, the burglary. Currently, we have a candidate, Donald Trump, who didn't break in to his opponent's headquarters. No, he called on Russia, Vladimir Putin, to commit espionage against the United States to help him in his election. They did. Even Russian officials now concede they were in contact with Donald Trump and that they helped with WikiLeaks. Not a surprise to anyone who was following it. So Trump apparently does something far worse than Richard Nixon. He doesn't even have the decency to have Americans break in. He uses our foreign enemies to break in. But in any case, Richard Nixon, after being forcibly removed from office, he would have been removed if he hadn't resigned. The country had a backlash against that kind of corruption and brought in Jimmy Carter. Interestingly, with the South still at that time, the last time really the solid South voted for a candidate. Jimmy Carter, of course, was a farmer from Georgia. He fit all the elements you would think for non-racist but rural Southerners, right? Small town Georgian peanut farmer, born again Christian, so he was an evangelical. He happened not to be a right-wing evangelical. He happened not to be one full of hate, but one full of love and caring. Jimmy Carter was not a racist. But that was the last time the Solid South voted for the Democrats. Then Ronald Reagan replayed the Southern Strategy, talked about welfare queens, suggested that there were welfare candidates, people on welfare who drove around in Cadillacs, and again brought back racial animosity. And Republicans have been the party of racists really ever since. Now, at the time, it was dog whistle racism, right? When George Bush Sr. ran for president, Lee Atwater of South Carolina knew very well how to stoke racial animus without quite being openly racist. He had those famous Willie Horton ads with this scary black man who Dukakis apparently, at least according to the Bush narrative, allowed on the streets again to commit another crime. And really it wasn't about Dukakis's criminal policy. It was about stoking up white fears about black people. But it was, again, a dog whistle. Next candidate for president was Bill Clinton. Bubba. Remember when they called him Bubba? From Arkansas. A good old boy. Now, like Jimmy Carter, he was a boy from the South that wasn't racist. But he had at least the cadence. He had the talk. He walked the walk. He was of those, that class of people, right? He was a, came from a poor white family and a single mother and made it good. And good for Bill Clinton for doing that. And he won a number of states in the South. Al Gore was from Tennessee. But Al Gore was seen, unlike Bill Clinton, as from, you know, the wealthy class of Tennessee people. And, well, a lot of Tennesseans, and I'm from Tennessee, felt that Al Gore moved away. That he lost his Tennessee roots. And we all know he lost, even though he won the popular vote in 2000. And even though he won the electoral vote, if you count all of Florida's votes, which we all know the Supreme Court refused to do, because they said if we count all the votes, Bush will lose. So we can't count all the votes. And that's how Bush became president. But notably, if Al Gore had won his home state of Tennessee, Florida would not have been close enough for the United States Supreme Court to do the coup d'etat that they did. So you could see this run-in with racism and the Southern strategy, it's played throughout, well, all the way up till today. George Bush, you would think, is from a patrician class, right? I mean, his father in Groton and Connecticut, and but, you know, he played the Texan, right? He pretended to own that ranch. Well, he did own the ranch. He bought it in 2000 when he was running for president, sold it after he left office, and he would go around and gather brush, because that's what cowboys do. They gather brush. Presumably, that's one of the things that a city boy can do. Heck, I can go out on a farm and gather brush. No expertise required. You can too. But it worked. It worked. And George W. Bush was the guy you could have a beer with. Then came Barack Obama. He didn't really fit the mold now, did he? He was the new Democrat. He had no Southern roots. Well, I mean, he also had a massive Bush recession, which I think propelled him to victory in 2008. But he had new Democrats. He had African Americans turn out in massive numbers. African Americans very loyal to Democrats, but the turnout was huge under Barack Obama. And he did talk about economic populist issues. It was easy. We were in a massive recession. It was caused by the Republicans. Everyone knew that. George Bush had caused it, and they allowed the banks to be too big to fail, and we were collapsing, and, well, it was an all-hands-on-deck moment. We had to go with someone like Barack Obama rather than the people who caused the crisis in the first place. So here comes Hillary Clinton. And I'm not going to deny I'm still sore, hurting. I'm sure you are too. If you're a thinking person, it hurts. You can be angry. You can be sad. Some of my happiest moments have been in denial. That's a good place to be. But Hillary Clinton, the first woman to win a major nomination, had trouble appealing to the good old boys. That's the narrative, right? Even though she's won dramatically in the popular vote, that's the narrative. And there's some truth in that narrative. There's also some truth that a lot of other factors led to this election. And I'm going to examine more of those after the break. The toll-free number, if you want to join in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You got an election hangover? See if you can find the cure here. I'll talk to you on the other side of this break.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
All Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine, trying to make sense of this election, trying to figure out where we go next. It's going to be a long 4 years. Let's face it. It's not going to be an easy 4 years. And obviously, due to the Electoral College, we now have a minority of Americans controlling the majority. But we have historical analogs for what happens when a minority controls a majority. The clearest example in my mind is apartheid, South Africa. We now live in apartheid America. A group of people who either are active, hating racists who really detest their fellow Americans, or people who are willing to tolerate racism. They don't necessarily are racist themselves, they think, but they're okay with racism if it does what they want them to do. In other words, they're tolerant of intolerance. They're not KKK members themselves, but, you know, if the KKK kills a few black people, you know. If Donald Trump does some really hateful things, they'll tolerate it. They'll tolerate. Yeah, so he'll grab a few. He'll sexually assault a few women. It's not that big a deal. They hate Hillary Clinton for some reason. Interestingly, most of the reasons that people give for disliking Hillary Clinton or the Democrats is based on, well, lies. Based on memes. Even Facebook is looking at the problems of social media where they have been publishing, people have been going back and forth with just complete lies. Hillary's a murderer. Hillary is, whatever. And if you think that people actively voted here on the issues, well, ask your Trumpist friend, colleague, neighbor, family member, what were the issues on which he or she voted? Maybe they'll say trade. It's the one issue Donald Trump brought out. But even if they say the Supreme Court, what is it about the Supreme Court that you want so much? You want to put women in jail for having abortions? You want to forcibly divorce gay couples? You want to deport all undocumented immigrants? And if you do want to do that, think about your own ancestors and when they came to America. Maybe you hate Muslims, all of them, even the 99% that aren't terrorists in America. Ask them why they supported the guy. I'm going to do that too. I'm going to have a call coming up soon, and I'm going to ask Trump supporters why they supported the guy. Because when it comes to trade, even when it comes to trade, why now? What will Trump do? What will Trump have to do what you say you wanted him to do? Because I guarantee you, you heard it here first. Donald Trump is not going to magically bring back manufacturing to this country. Donald Trump is not going to get rid of lobbyists. Donald Trump is of the billionaire class, and his goal will be to pocket as much money as he can for himself while laughing at, mocking the people who supported him. This is Mark Levine. I'll be right back. 888-48-MARK right after this. We'll be right back.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. If you're watching on Facebook, we've switched over to a new video. This is part two, just to deal with some technical issues here. Still trying to deal with my post-election hangover. I know many of you are too. You can give me a call at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. There are lots of reasons why this happened. I've talked about the great power that we should never forget of racism in America. There's also the fact, obviously, that people in rural America are struggling. Of course, they've been struggling since Ronald Reagan's times, and that's because of outsourcing. That's because of people like Donald Trump, who takes all of his jobs abroad and has done so pretty much his entire career, making, I forget, vodka in China or Scandinavia. I don't remember where they all are. Ties in China. But the reason why Donald Trump does that is because Republican policies have, for decades now, rewarded companies for taking jobs offshore. In fact, one of the things that Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders wanted to do was to punish companies for taking jobs offshore. Interestingly, Donald Trump would reward them because what he would do is allow them to bring money back into the United States tax-free, which actually encourages more people to go abroad. Now, these issues weren't discussed in the campaign. It was a campaign that devoted more time to Hillary Clinton's emails, which we all know turned out to be a non-story, right? Nothing happened there. She did what Colin Powell did. It was perfectly legal, and there was no reason to think anything was criminal. But more time was spent on those emails than every single issue in the campaign combined. Tells you something about our media. And let's not forget Jim Comey. I talked a lot about Jim Comey when it happened. We now know from the polls that Jim Comey single-handedly, this one man doing an illegal action, has single-handedly changed the course of the election. He accused Hillary Clinton of things that did not occur. He suggested he had some evidence against her when he did not. He caused everyone to focus on that, and polls show that that was the difference in the race. Now, the polls were off and off, too, but it was by a big enough margin, and Hillary Clinton has said it herself, Jim Comey breaking the law, breaking protocols, violating the Hatch Act, single-handedly got Donald Trump elected. Now, there were other causes. We have to keep that in mind, too. We have to keep in mind how we got here. We should never forget how we got here. Donald Trump had no intention of being president when he ran for president. CNN has reported that he told Chris Christie that he hoped to make it to October of 2015, and that when he did not make it, he was going to endorse Chris Christie. That was the plan. He said himself he never thought he would get as far as he did to win the primaries. And on Election Day, if you watched carefully, at 6 o'clock, they told us that the Donald Trump team was very despondent and unhappy and worried about Florida and Latino turnout, and they never thought they were going to win. But they did. Not the popular vote, of course. Most Americans rejected Donald Trump, not just the majority, but the plurality. Millions more Americans chose Hillary Clinton, we will find out. 600,000 now, but they're still counting. The point is, we need to know how we got here, because this is not a candidate for the majority of the American people. This is a candidate of the minority. This is the rejected candidate. More Americans preferred Hillary Clinton. And we need to remember that when he claims he has a mandate. Now, to the extent that Donald Trump supports democratic principles like building up infrastructure, you may recall Barack Obama tried to do more infrastructure in his stimulus package, and the Republicans said, no, we're against building roads and bridges, because Republicans, and I've said this now for 15 years on the air, 13 years on the air, I've said Republicans who claim to not want deficits are liars. Republicans want massive deficits when they're in power and oppose deficits when they're not in power. You don't have to take my word for it. Under Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, they supported massive government spending. Under Jimmy Carter, they opposed it and said Carter was spending too much. Under Ronald Reagan, they supported massive deficit spending. Under George Bush Sr., they supported massive spending. In fact, when George Bush Sr. raised taxes to try to cut back on the deficit, that's one of the reasons why people say he was thrown out of office in 1992. Under Bill Clinton's reign, they supported surpluses. They said that Clinton was spending too much, and some of them even take credit for the Clinton surpluses. But when it turned to George Bush Jr., guess what? They again supported deficits, massive deficits, massive spending as far as the eye could see. Under Barack Obama, well, we know their position. They opposed deficits. They opposed deficit spending. They didn't even want to repair our bridges. They made very clear they don't want to increase the national debt. But under Trump, I'm quite confident Republicans will support massive debt spending again. So the next time a Republican tells you he's a fiscal conservative or she's a fiscal conservative, just laugh in their face. Because they're not. Maybe you can find me one or two. Maybe Jeff Flake is. But the vast majority of Republicans want massive debt when it's their programs, you know, giving special tax breaks to billionaires, making sure all their lobbyists are happy, helping companies pollute, giving special tax breaks to oil companies. When it's their priorities, they want massive debt. When it's our priorities, children, people who are in need of health care, people who would like to go to college, seniors who are struggling, when it's economic opportunity and small business loans and things that Democrats support, guess what? It's too much money. Too much money. 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's see if we can talk to Maria in Phoenix on line three. Hey, Maria, how are you?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I don't know if I'm coming in clear.
It's a little broken up. I've been told we have a problem on our board, but keep talking. If it gets really bad, I'll let you know.
Sounds like a plan. You know, usually I don't call radio stations, and as of late I have been. You know, and I can totally get when elections come up and some, you know, the opponent or the Republican on the other side, you know, when that person wins, you know, we kind of fall into the spot where, okay, well, all right, they won, let's see what can happen. But unfortunately, in this case, what we have fallen into is that this time, this guy will not only affect what he does to his own constituents, but he's also going to affect those that didn't vote for him. For example, if I may, this guy is already appointing lobbyists.
Yes.
To handle the Social Security side.
That's right. He's okay. Already. I got to repeat a little bit what you say, because you are breaking up a bit, which isn't your fault. It's our board's having some issues. But I was going to repeat what you said. You said he's going to affect those that didn't vote for him. For example, he's already bringing in armies of lobbyists to attack Social Security. But keep going.
Correct. And so, with that being said, if they cut Social Security, if they privatize Social Security, that not only affects his side, his voters, but it affects the ones that didn't vote for him. And that is, I think, one of the reasons why I'm so pissed off, for starters.
I tell you what, Maria, I want to take a break, just because your sound quality is not great, and also hopefully we can fix it in the break. But just to repeat what you said, he's affecting not just his voters, but those that didn't vote for him, trying to privatize Social Security. And I'm going to say this, and then we'll take a break. I think we will find in 4 years that he didn't just harm the blacks and the Mexicans and the Jews and the gays and the women and all the people he wants to harm, but he actually harmed you rural white men too. Mark my words. You don't want Social Security privatized. You don't want to lose your health care. You don't want to lose your Medicare. You don't want your kids not to have an opportunity to go to college. He's actually going to harm all of us, except the billionaire class will do very well. I guarantee you Donald Trump will have corrupt people and will be lining his pockets with everything our nation has. He will do. Donald Trump will become richer from this, but the entire nation, 99% of us, are going to be poorer. Maria, hopefully we can fix the phones. We'll be right back. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275, back after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. We're having a little bit of technical issues today. I like to think the internet is crying, too. But hopefully we can hear enough of what you have to say so I can comment on it. But with only about 8 minutes left in the show and the technical issues, I'll ask you to keep your comments short. I do want to go back to Maria, though, because she had a second point to make. Maria, go line three, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for holding with me. One of the things, the last thing I want to say, I think it's really, really, really important, and I really hope that you pass this on, and if you'll let me just finish this one thing. Democrats, for lack of a better term, need to grow some cojones. And if they don't know how to do it, they can go and talk to Elizabeth Warren, because that lady's got a lot of guts, and we should take a lesson from her. We need to stop being soft. We need to stop being polite. And we need to stop being pushed around. Once we do that and we show strength, I think we'll be okay.
Maria, thank you for that. I couldn't agree with you more. I think Elizabeth Warren says what exactly comes out of my heart. And we've got to fight back. We cannot say, oh, well, you know, so Trump is racist and misogynist and hates Mexicans and Muslims and lies all the time. You know, he got elected. So, no. We are heading for one of the darkest periods in American history. We've got to be alert. We've got to listen. And we've got to pounce on him the moment he acts outside the Constitution, outside of American values. We need to stand up for people that are being harassed right now, for people, whether they be transgender or Muslim or black or Latino, people who are the victims of violence. We need to stand up for them, and we need to call out the president when and if he does. I mean, just the other day, he was attacking the New York Times. Well, all we have left is the First Amendment. We don't have the presidency or either House of Congress or judges, Supreme Court, or states, most states, all we have left is our free speech. And if he attacks our free speech, we need to fill the streets. We've got to remember, filling the streets is the last resort against the dictators. It's how the people fight back in Russia, in China, in Syria, in Egypt, until they're mowed down. And I don't think our military would do that. So thank God the protesters are there. Violence is never, never appropriate. But if you are acting peacefully, get out and protest. And remember, we have to fight to protect America. And it's going to be a long 4 years. All right. Joshua in Virginia, line one.
Give it a sec. We may have finished it. Just hold on
1 minute. Okay. So no callers yet?
Just give us a minute.
All right. No problem. So we don't have a lot of time, folks. Sorry about that. I'll tell you what, folks. I will be back on the air Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. You can call in from the moment I start speaking, please do, because I want to chat with all of you. I know that there's a guy named Tony who disagrees with me. Tony, I want to give you lots of time to disagree with me, and we're running out of time. We've had technical issues today, so I want you to call back. Tony I'll just read the comments here until our phones are working again. Joshua in Virginia says that Democratic strategy and message is the reason Hillary lost. I would say it's a reason. I wouldn't say it's the reason. I'd say there are many reasons all in and of themselves. Electoral College, obviously. Jim Comey, obviously. The appeal of racism, obviously. The suffering of rural America, obviously. But sure, Democratic strategy and message, I agree with you. And let's not let the media off the hook either. The media that spent more time on non-existent emails and didn't focus, for example, on Trump University. That trial is coming up for fraud, for defrauding innocent working people, making them spend tens of thousands of dollars to watch a YouTube video. And you know what? I'll bet dollars to donuts Trump loses the case. He'll probably settle. And when he does settle and he pays them off, let's all remember that is an admission of guilt. He may not say it is, but it is. Why else would he be paying them off? Right? And that's far more severe than the emails. We need to focus on that when it happens. I expect that to happen next month. John in California on line 4 said that Trump's connections to Russia need to be investigated. I completely agree, particularly when the Russians themselves say they were in contact with the Trump campaign. Deputy Foreign Minister, this isn't just some nobody. Deputy Foreign Minister of Russia talked about his ties to the Trump campaign. Meanwhile, we have WikiLeaks. They agreed that they worked with WikiLeaks, and they did so to elect Donald Trump. When you have the President of the United States working with our greatest enemy, this is something that we need to talk about. Okay, apparently the phones are working a little bit. Let's go to John in California, line 4. Let's go back to that Russian connection. Go ahead, John.
You hit on it pretty good in your lead-up. I just wanted to underscore, I mean, there's evidence there. There's the Dworkin report. You mentioned the deputy prime minister, but there was another Russian official who basically said that, yeah, WikiLeaks was ours.
Yeah, deputy foreign minister, actually, but go ahead.
And all you got to do is look at the fact that, you know, they're dancing in the street in Moscow and they're rioting in America. You know, it's like, come on.
I tell you who I'm really concerned about. I'm really concerned about the Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. These were independent nations that the Soviet Union invaded them in World War II, took them over, and then they've been freed, and they're part of NATO. Now, our treaty with NATO says if one nation is attacked, we're all attacked. But all of them have some Russian minority population. I fully expect Russia to do, and mark my words, because I'm telling you now, it hasn't happened yet. So then I'm going to play this clip a year from now when it happens. Mark my words, Russia is going to quietly send more and more Russian-speaking people across the border. They're going to arm them. They're going to give them troops. They're going to give them guns. And they're going to say it's a popular revolution when it's really Russia doing it. Because that's what they did in Georgia. That's what they did in Ukraine. And when Russia overturns the government and sends troops in, we have to, as NATO allies, respond. And if we don't, the alliance is dead. The Cold War is over. Russia won. They can then send tanks into all of Poland, Hungary, Czech. Once we make clear that we don't defend our allies will desert us. And the whole post-war peace that was worked so hard with everyone from Truman to Reagan to Clinton, it goes away. So I'm very afraid of that. I certainly don't think this president-elect is preparing for it. And who knows what he'll do? Maybe he'll realize he made a mistake, back off, threaten nukes. Who knows what this guy's going to do? Let's try to warn him now. Because I don't like this guy, but I do not want World War III. And he needs to see it coming. If I can see it coming, I guarantee you his generals can see it coming. The question is, will he listen to him? Sorry I didn't get to all the calls. I promise if you call back on Wednesday, I will take your calls at 888-488-MARK. Hang in there, everybody.